finished this morning looking through the book of Judges to remind ourselves of the story. Brother Michael has kindly gone through the story of Ruth, and now we can talk about things and learn the lessons and look at the types. If we had the chart up, which we haven't, one of my big problems, which I've asked about and thought about for hours, is trying to fit this into the chronology. Ruth was born of Boaz and Salmon. Salmon gave birth to Boaz. Boaz married Ruth. And in three generations' time, David is born. Now, it's a fact that Boaz was considerably older than Ruth. I don't advise any young brother who's trying to interest a young lady in his company to call her my daughter. On several occasions, my daughter, says Boaz, and it's not the way to endear anybody to your heart, young men. So, no doubt, Boaz was considerably older than Ruth. I hope about 150 years, because I've lost 150 years in my chronology somewhere. And if anybody has done this, and it's nice to have David, perhaps you can help me afterwards, you've got from the time of Rahab, who gave birth to Boaz, who married Ruth, and then just from the Rahab of Joshua's time, fitting it through to David, I only wish we could chop out about 200 years, it made life a lot easier. Nothing's always easy, and you always get a few problems, so I'll just point that out, because I firmly believe what the Bible said. It's possible there's a generation missing, I doubt it, but in this case, but again, if you want to have a look at that, do so. You look at lessons in the book of Ruth. Start with chapter 1. Now we know the story, we've reminded ourselves of the story, and what stupid people, what godless people, a man who's only just got into the land was, oh dear, there's a famine, we've got to go. Oh, sorry, I've got to stand still. I'm killing this video moving around. I'm sorry, I can't help it. They're going to get some fast cameras, you know. But there's a famine in the land, and it's absolutely faithless, although I can't find the father or the sons condemned for it, apart from the fact that all three die out of the land and are buried out of the land, which is punishment enough for anybody in Israel. But only having just got there, now to say, we can't stay, there's a famine, we've got to go, doesn't look very godly. When some of you are older and you go to business meetings and there's a few complaints and arguments and you say, oh, I can't stay in this meeting, we've got to go to another one. You don't solve anything by moving meetings at the drop of a hat or a quarrelsome remark at a business meeting. Stay and let your light shine and sort it out. Running away from trouble just to keep your own hands clean or your own heart from being moved over a few inches isn't what's advised at all. And I can't see that God was at all impressed with this man who says, for the want of his children or not, we've got to go. Because he has an older brother, or a first cousin, or somebody, called Boaz. The nearest relative, obviously, was pretty close. Same family, or very, very close relatives, Elimelech and Boaz. And Boaz was a most successful farmer at the end of that famine. We're told that they stayed in Midian for 10 years. Stayed in Moab, rather, for 10 years. And that was while the famine was on. So when you sort of emigrate for the good of the family, all right, if God says go, go. God said to Jacob, yes, it's all right, you go down into Egypt, I will bring you out. And he did. But when God put you in the promised land, and within a very short number of years, there's a famine, surely it's there to test you. If the time is hard, if the running is a little bit more stiff, if the plaster stops you from running, obviously, we're not meant to say, oh, I can't do anything, just sink down. You stand on the platform and you give exhortations about the plaster on your leg. And I think we heard an extremely good exhortation this morning from a young man who did just that, and I got the guts to do it. You've got impediments sometimes, and somebody who can't speak and stutters every word and still makes the effort is a lot more encouragement than if he shut up completely. Try to get over these things. Boaz did, but Elimelech couldn't. And Boaz died, not only to be buried in his own land, but to have a very nice young wife to go with him, probably bury him in the end. Whereas Elimelech, who gave up, got buried in a foreign land. Lessons indeed. The sons were old enough. If you look in chapter 1 of Ruth, verse 2, they were called Ephrathites, which means they lived in Bethlehem Ephratah, and they weren't little boys in short trousers. Although I've noticed these days little boys don't wear short trousers. I used to when I was a little boy, but very few little boys today. They go straight into long trousers. But these were not little boys in short or long trousers. They didn't hold daddy's hand. They were Ephrathites. In other words, they were citizens. Probably 18 years old at least. And they obviously had to agree to go. So where Joshua said, me and my house will serve the Lord, I say so, it looks as though, shall we go, folks? Family business meeting took place and the vote was yes and they all went. In which case, they are to be blamed as well. They go out of the land. The family go with them. Verse 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And after that, her sons married our equivalent out of the truth. For those who've got two faithful parents, thank the Lord for them. For those who come from or find themselves in single parent families, it's not quite so hard as it might be. At least you've got one. But I know as a school teacher, it doesn't half upset the kids' stability on many, many occasions. You people probably don't realise how much, a few years ago, your behaviour was affected by what went on at home. I well remember the fifth-year girl who was charming, good-looking and intelligent. And suddenly she started to play up like Billy-O. And in the staff meeting we were saying, just why is this girl behaving like this all of a sudden? And it turned out father had gone off with somebody else and mother just couldn't cope. And daughter was expressing it in plaguing the life out of her staff. And when you realise that, obviously, background affects us tremendously. And for you who are thinking of becoming parents and getting married and becoming providers of stable influences, make sure that you recognise. Not that in English law now you can get divorced after 1 year, which you can since October 85. Just 1 year the law requires, but marriage is for life. And if you're not quite sure, don't get married yet. Death is another thing. Pray the Lord it won't happen. But having got a stable relationship and having got parents who love and care, just pause to thank the Lord for it. Verse 4. They shouldn't marry out of the truth. And the lesson for everybody in this room who is not yet married, and the lesson for everybody in this room who is married, marriage is for life. It is a God-ordained ceremony. Christ's first miracle was endorsing a marriage. The very first thing God ever said to the man and woman which he'd just made was be fruitful and multiply, which meant have children, so there's nothing dirty in that either. It is a very, very sacred thing and completely blessed by God, but only in the Lord. Two cannot walk together unless they be agreed. And whether it's going to a fraternal or going to a disco, one wants to go one the other. Something happens, you get in the car for a journey, one wants to pray, the other wants to turn on the pop music. Well, turn on pop music after you've prayed by all means. But parents have got to be of one mind. Some manage very well without it, but you're fools if you try to be those. And the lesson here is that the moment Dada died, the influence, which I don't think was very godly in the first place anyway, is now gone. And they've got nobody there to say, no, you shouldn't do it. Elimelech might have said it rather feebly. And they go out and they do it, and they marry in our equivalent out of the truth. One husband, Mahlon, was obviously quite successful. Because when he died, his widow, Ruth, was willing to accept her husband's religion. You never know, young folks, how soon your partner's going to die. Being a lot more cheerful, you know, don't know how long you're going to become friends with a person whom now you're getting friends with. Make the most of it. Who knows, you might have the milkman you've got because God wants him in the truth. you cannot say that anybody who comes into your little orbit is not God ordained. As many as were ordained to eternal life believed. Now, everybody, do you know they're not ordained to eternal life, or they are? They don't have a little mark in their forehead. And just the fact of sitting beside you in a bus, or sharing a bedroom with you at university, or whatever contact you might have, God might have ordained that person to eternal life. God obviously had a mark on Ruth. So he let her marry Mahlon, who eventually, although he didn't last long, taught her sufficient of the truth that when he was dead, that your God will be my God and your people will be my people. And he took that little opportunity he got to teach what obviously the other one, Chilion, didn't. Because Orpah just went back and, oh, I can't stick this. She went back to her people, her gods. This lesson, obviously. Chapter 2, verse 1. Boaz had endured exactly the same famine as Elimelech. Elimelech thought he couldn't manage. Boaz had. It stayed, it weathered out the storm, and he's a successful farmer. And the lesson is obvious. Things go wrong, thank God they're not worse. And get on and do something about it. Verse 15. You would think that if he was in love, or just beginning to get in love, or at least a gentleman, he would not have told this girl to stay and glean in the fields, but to give her a sack of corn every night, or once a week, and save her the work. Obviously, you can think of the types as well as I can. If Boaz is God, God doesn't encourage laziness. Okay, dear, I'll look after this. Of course you can pass your exams if you go to the meetings. And it doesn't follow. You have to go to the meetings and do your homework as well. And the lesson which seems to come from this, chapter 2, verse 15. When she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. Yes, life was easier, but it wasn't with no effort at all. And sometimes there's a cushion for us to fall on. But fall we do, because we need the experience. It was Peter who denied, and then said, you denied the Holy One. We learn lessons, and then we can help the others from our own lessons. And obviously, the father here, typified by Boaz, didn't say, okay dear, you can just help yourself whenever you want to. A useful lesson. Chapter 3, verse 13. Whatever it means, Brother Michael started on this, but we weren't able to get very far, obviously, about the idea of going a lady alone into a farmer's barn at night when he knew the farmer was lying there asleep and laying down beside him was a little bit provocative, whatever the reason. And when Boaz wakes up, and is rather embarrassed to find a young lady, probably young enough to be his daughter, but still a young lady there, he gives her a sack of corn and says, go home, possibly just to keep her happy. Because he was kind. He said, oh, you know, have some vegetables in my garden before you go home, sort of thing. But just a friendly gesture. Could well be to disguise the fact that she'd actually been there to do anything else but just get a bag of corn. And if anybody did see the woman leaving the barn with a bag of corn on, well, she's the daughter-in-law of the widow woman, and he's come for a bag of corn, and the whole thing might have been just a cleverly thought-out disguise for the true reason. He might just obviously have saved her a week's work. Somebody calculated that a bag of corn was equivalent to 6 days' work, and Jews don't work the seventh day, so he gave her the next week off, in effect. But this is, again, the sort of lesson which we can learn. If he was tempted or not, he didn't show it. And without sort of embarrassing people, I know some don't like to think about relationships at all in public, you've got to face facts, and you've got to realise that if you're a boy and a girl comes in and the door's shut, it is possible to do virtually anything. And girls think the same about boys. He was pure. He set the wheels in motion from this time on, and it's obvious he was quite in love with her already. follow it through and let nobody say you don't find love stories in the Bible. You can find the progress. He didn't want the servants bothering her, which is possibly one reason why he said don't trouble her. He wouldn't say because I've got my eye on her myself. He didn't want anybody to go and ask her questions, so he made sure he warned them all off in the first place. He was starting to get interested. He wanted all the men out of her way. It's possible. I mean, you can read into these things all sorts. But he was honourable. And there's that verse in Hebrews, marriage is honourable in all, and the bed undefiled. But whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge. Filthy jokes are out, sex outside of marriage is out, but within marriage it's sanctified and it's pure and nothing wrong with it, as long as you don't joke about it. And that just seems to be, even from the Old Testament stories such as this, the sort of lesson we must learn. Chapter 4. The unnamed man who didn't want to mar his inheritance. A smashing lesson, and that is the lesson. The unnamed man. He didn't want to spoil his own inheritance. He wanted his name on the gate and a nice long drive up to his house. He wanted his shop or bank with his name above it. And what was his name? We haven't got a clue. We are just not told. That's how important he was in God's eyes. Some people set pillars up in their own name. Absalom was one. They want their own names on their houses. They want their printed letter paper. They want to be thought of as having made provision for themselves after they've gone. And this one, the only reason he wouldn't marry Ruth in case he upset his family and his descendants and his family tree after him. And the Bible just doesn't tell us who he was. That's how important he was. And finally, the lessons. Now, a few minutes on the types. Verse 13. Boaz, last chapter, Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went unto her, the Lord gave her conception. She bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And it shall be unto thee as a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. First lesson I get from that is, rejoice with them that do rejoice. Some of us think babies are daft, soft little things with red faces and they make a noise. But some folks, especially their mums, love them. And, oh yes, it's nice, isn't it, and walk off. Oh, no, not for me. Rejoice with those that do rejoice. Sometimes somebody in the family has died. Sometimes somebody in the family has failed an exam. Something's gone wrong in another family. Oh, it's not me. And let's carry on. Pity, isn't it? The lesson was that they rejoiced. The old lady now who'd lost everything has now got a descendant. And your family name is going to be continued. And it was said that Naomi has borne a son. She was so close. And those who listen to all these silly stories about mother-in-laws, good half of them are true. But the other half, obviously, and the scriptural half, it's only superstition anyway. Here was a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law from different races and completely different backgrounds who got on so unified that when Jew and Gentile walked together hand in hand back to Jerusalem, you've got without doubt a type of the kingdom. But start at the beginning and just see the whole type in this. It's in chapter 1 of Ruth that you've got the idea here of in the time of the judges, when everybody was doing that which was right in his own eyes, and it was right all mix up, sometime in the time of the judges, probably about in the middle, somewhere around the Gideon stage, there's this famine, and off went Elimelech. Tomorrow's morning's devotional will be based on this idea of morals to do with serving God. And here was a man, who always typifies God, leading a woman, who always typifies the bride, or us, the chosen ones, astray. Here was a false god. Elimelech actually starts his name with El, which was their name for God anyway. And here was the false god leading the Baal doing his job once again. Influence of the judges died, and without doubt, this was the false god leading the woman and the offspring astray. Naomi was a faithful woman. Women in those days mostly obeyed their husbands. And here was the woman being led by the false god, Israel being led astray by the false religion. You don't find Israel being condemned for going and robbing and doing filthy things to other nations. Their sin was in their religion. And this whole story seems to be a type of that. Away from God they went, typified here, into the strange country. Ruth, without doubt, is a Gentile bride. Little children of five can work this out for themselves. You've got the false god, and you've got Israel as a nation. Now being led by the false gods, the worship of Baal, going into the world, dropping out of the ecclesia, if you like, and in the way, finding somebody who perhaps got married, never even heard the word Christadelphian, but later becomes a very, very active member. Ruth is the Gentile bride. And Orpah is the Gentile bride, which dropped out. There could well be some in this room now, and there must be many who couldn't even be bothered to come to Swanwick, or couldn't for some reason or other, who are in the process of dropping out. And it's mighty sad. And those of us who are the Ruths have got to make awfully sure that the Orpahs understand just what they're condemning themselves to. Ugh, can't stick this. And back they go to their people and their gods. When you're in for life, and life is everlasting life. It's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Give or take the judgment, and we've got to take it, definitely. But Orpah was the one who learnt about it, perhaps had a form of godliness, but definitely denied the power. She couldn't stick the pace. She perhaps had read part of the Old Testament, which Moses had already written. It wasn't for her. She couldn't keep the separateness. She couldn't keep the sacrifice bit. Something she couldn't keep. If only Naomi and only Ruth had tried a bit harder, there might have been the three of them to go back. Let nobody say, the person who doesn't come anymore, the person who isn't interested, or the person who doesn't make an effort, nothing to do with me. I hope the ABs in the Ecclesia have a good go. As an AB, it is mighty hard knocking on folks' doors and saying, why aren't you coming to the meeting anymore? And immediately, barriers go up and hackles rise. You youngsters, get in and invite the person to your house. Take them out on a Saturday. Get friendly with them. And stop on the riverbank to do the reading or whatever. And get in before the ABs. Because then often it's too late. Orpah needed a friendly hand on her shoulder. It wasn't there. And she toddled off back to the world. The two of them, the Jewish bride, Naomi, the Gentile bride, Ruth, she's no longer Gentile. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. And they held hands and walked back. To where? To Bethlehem. The whole subject of Ruth could be summarised as no bread in the house of bread. Because Beth means house of, and Lehem means bread. So the whole idea was no bread, a famine, in the house of bread. And it was a place where God had chosen that his son should be born. And so all sorts of things happened there. It was the place from which David had been chosen to be king. It was the place where Rachel had been buried. It was very near to the place where all the Jews were marshalled. If you look in Jeremiah chapter 41, all the Jews had been marshalled there, almost like a railway marshalling yard, before they'd been taken off in chains to Babylon. And Jeremiah had been let go back. and that's very close to Ramah and Bethlehem, and that is why the voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and weeping. The voice, the quotation picked up when the babies were killed in that very same area. Again, the types were there. No bread in the house of bread? Of course there is. Real bread, says Jesus, doesn't mean the actual bread we have underneath jam. There's a lot more serious bread from above. Of course, when the Gentile and the Jew together get to the place of providing bread, there's a farmer, the one who gives the bread. I am the bread of life. Boaz or Jesus, virtually the same in type. Who then says, will you marry me? And the baby, the result of that marriage, is acclaimed by Jew as much as by Gentile. It's a mixed race baby. In other words, it's the son that is born, came to save the world. And you can begin to look at types and ideas behind any story such as that. So those who leave the truth, those who can't be bothered with it, punishments sometimes come and sometimes are not recorded. But the one who stays till the end shall be saved. And if, my friends, you can learn any lessons from Ruth, let it be that the state we are at the moment, we're dead and dying like Orpah. But if we're like Ruth, a little girl who's willing to change, the kingdom's ahead of us, and a farmer to give us bread for eternity.